For most spaces, I would say you probably get very far with three subwoofers and advanced technology. Four is better, obviously. Beyond four, you may start getting, less returns, I would say.
Hello, and welcome to the Reform's Home AV podcast for Monday, the 20th of May. And on this edition, I am joined by Dr. Julian Scott. Hi, Jules.
Hi, Phil.
Neil Davidson. Hi, Neil.
Hi, Phil.
And we've got Matthias Johansson from Dirac. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Phil.
So what are we talking about today? Well, hopefully, if you are following the podcast in chronological order for 2024, we have reached the next logical point in our discussion, which is in terms of designing a room and turning that into a media room or a home cinema or so on. And that's subwoofers. It's a subject and a half. It needs a whole podcast to itself. Not just, you'll notice I said subwoofers, not subwoofer. We are talking about using multiple subs, which I think, Neil, is a given these days. I think most people have signed up to the fact that you need multiple subs in a room these days.
Well, surely for the last 20 years we've had that as a given, Phil. Physics hasn't changed in that time.
Yes, it hasn't. It hasn't. But it's nice to see that people have caught up to this idea of using multiple subs and using them correctly. And of course, our special guest today from Dirac. If people are not aware of what Dirac is, Matthias, maybe you can explain what it is and why people should be interested in your product.
Right. So, yeah, Dirac is a company that I and five others co-founded more than 20 years ago. And the idea behind the company and the product was simply to get the most out of any speaker system by optimizing them digitally through signal processing, so through software. So that was our idea, and we spun off a few different products from that. Actually, where we came into first was in cars, in high-end audio systems in cars. BMW, Bentley, Rolls-Royce were some of our first customers. And the reason why they started using our technology was that there was no way they could get the kind of high fidelity sound that they were after in that very difficult acoustic space, which the car cabin is. So that was the perfect sort of playing ground for technology such as Dirac and Dirac Live. And that is the technology that we're using then for room correction in home audio systems and to do room correction, optimizing, tuning the speaker to the room, simply speaking.
Excellent. So we thought we'd get that one out of the way very first, because this is where the conversation is going to go today on the AV Phones podcast. So just before we do get started and before we get into the subject, we just need to do a little bit of housekeeping. So first of all, AV Forum's podcast channel is a podcast channel you need to subscribe to if you want every single one of these podcasts in video form. We're also available on most podcast providers for audio only, so you can find us out there. If you enjoy our content and you like these conversations and the guests that we have on here, and you want to bring others in and make them aware of the content, then please do share it around on forums and other social media and so on. It'd be great if you could do that for us. And who are we? Who are AV Forum? So we're one of the largest AV and hi-fi communities on the internet. We were founded in 2000 and our editorial started in 2003, and we create content for you, the end user. There's no influence from manufacturers or advertisers or anything like that. We give you honest, unbiased and experienced opinions and knowledge. And we also bring people in from the industry to give you a different angle on a lot of the subjects. And who am I? Well, I'm Phil Hinton. I'm the editor of the site. I have been for the last 20 years. And I'm also certified by ISF, THX and PVA. I review most of the TVs on the site. I also cover a lot of audio reviews, and you'll see my face in most of the AV Forum's videos. And also joining us today is Julian Scott. Jules, why don't you briefly introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, it was clearly the editorial quality that attracted me, because I became a member of AV Forums as a geeky enthusiast back in 2004. So, and then in 2011 became a professional video calibrator with THX. Now with Professional Video Alliance, I also instruct for them and also do audio calibration certified by the HAA.
Excellent. And Neil, why don't you tell us about yourself?
Well, you know what? I also realised that I joined AV Forums in 2004. And I am old enough to have been involved in training of video calibration and all of those types of things since those days. I now stress that I leave those things to the professionals like Julian. So not so much of that my day-to-day work. I am involved very much though in designing very, very nice cinema systems with our partners around the world, which I'm always very grateful for.
Excellent. And Matthias, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, so I'm one of the founders of Dirac. I have a PhD in signal processing, and I'm the chief technology officer of the company these days.
Excellent. So that's your lineup for the panel today. And before we get our conversation underway, we have current competitions to get through, and Jules is going to tell us about a turntable that you can win.
Sure. Yeah, you can win the new Project T2 Super Phono turntable worth £559, courtesy of Peter Tyson and Henley Audio. The new Project T2 Super Phono is the perfect deck if you're looking to step up from a starter turntable, and comes with the Sumiko Rainier cartridge, glass platter, and the option of three colorways: gloss black, satin white, or walnut. Competition closes 11:59 p.m. Sunday, the 2nd of June. So why not head over to avforums.com/competitions to enter. Competition is open to eligible AV Forums members over 18 and who are resident in the UK.
Thanks for reading that out, Jules. Excellent. And disc competitions, if you are retro, you can go and win some DVDs. We also got some Blu-rays and 4K discs available for patrons and standard AV Forums members to win. So that's the same address there. Previous winners, J-Roll won a set of KEF LSX2LT wireless hi-fi speakers, which were worth a grand total of £899. Well done, J-Roll, on winning that competition. And we've got some new patrons. We have The Box, Arthur Yarwood, and Gordon Bell. Bernard, thank you very much for your support, guys. Thank you for contributing. Every contribution you make helps us produce more editorial content, and one of these days we may even make a good podcast. No promises though. And also bought us a coffee, Repo Man 666, and beer bottles. Thank you very much for buying us a coffee. Right, very quickly, we need to move on to some of the Q&A feedback. If you do have questions, obviously we can't answer them live as this is now recorded, but you can get in touch with us via email, podcast@avforums.com. You can go in the comment section down below on YouTube and ask your question there. Or you can go to avforums.com, go to the forum list all the way to the bottom, find the podcast forum, find this episode, ask your question, and we will answer them in the next one. So we're going back to the Home AV podcast on the 15th of April, which was the big problem with your Home AV system explained, which is obviously the room. Jessica Noir said, great podcast, learned a lot, and looking forward to your thread, Phil. We converted our garage when we moved into a new build, and so on, and they had quite the experience. Toon Army says he'd love to convert his garage, however he's got a bike habit, six and counting, which is even more expensive than his AV and his hi-fi habits. And I can imagine that. I know some people with some very expensive two-wheel machines that they have to pedal. So yeah, Toon Army, thank you for your comments. Dr. H said, I converted my garage in 2009. It's the same layout as yours, Phil, with the door to the front of the house in the same place. He's watched lots of films, F1, streaming series, all the rest of it. And what he's saying there is aesthetics were very important there to keep the missus, keep her in the house and keep the peace. A fantastic episode, says Bill. Great to see a UK version for a change on building a home cinema. Coming to the end of a modest room build in the spare room, we'd love to see this theme developed in more detail. The hocus pocus of expensive cables, speaker placement, sound treatments, perhaps a DIY segment. Well, stay tuned. We'll certainly take the feedback on board and see if we can introduce those. He also said he'd love to see a piece on the UK in terms of room design and so on versus US. That will certainly get round to having a look at that as well. Pressure said, great episode about a subject dear to my heart. The AV room is still a family room and has been the subject of many intense negotiations over the years. We reached a great compromise a couple of years ago, got the speakers on stands, small dedicated rack and two acoustic panels, which look pretty, but make such a difference to the sound. And he's now very happy with the room, and the family can also use the same space. So thank you very much, Pressure, for your comments. And Chester, he says, what a podcast. Well, thank you very much. We're getting close to making a good podcast. More more of these, please. Don't hold back on the technical element. It's been seriously engrossing, and he feels like he's learned so many things have clicked into place for him. He says, brilliant. Well, thank you very much for the feedback, everybody. We'll update you in next month's podcast in terms of where we are with my room in particular, and some things, wheels have started to get into motion with that. So we'll have some things to talk about in the next episode, hopefully on that one. Right, so let's move on to our panel subject today. Everything you need to know about multi-subwoofers, bass performance in your room, and the pitfalls and solutions available. That's what we're talking about today. Neil, you design rooms. How important are the subwoofers, and how many are you specifying?
I was going to say, this is a loaded subject. Dear me, we've got Munich coming up. There'll be people looking to assault me if I'm not careful in this category. So for the longest time, we have always recommended to use 4 subwoofers in the room. Now, that has served us well and continues to serve us well. However, of course, there is a lot of new technology that's coming to the marketplace now. Now, I'll preempt a little bit, perhaps, some of the discussion coming up. What one of the most difficult things when you're doing an audio calibration is actually just the boring data acquisition and processing part of that whole thing. Now, as you add more and more and more subwoofers into this, and of course, it's not just a case of put loads in and slap them any old place. There's quite a bit of science goes along with adding those subwoofers in there, but to make them all work is not just the case of having them and having them in the right place. There's the relationship between how they are functioning together has got to be very, very carefully considered as well. That's where really these new technologies are starting to provide such value for us in designing of these cinemas. People are interested in going further now. I am still to be personally convinced about your whole 16 subwoofer options and all that type of stuff. But hey, I hope to be convinced very, very soon that that's exactly the right way to go. And certainly the technology is improving day by day.
So, Matthias, what's your view on this subject, just to kick the conversation off?
Number of subwoofers in particular? That depends entirely on the budget and the size of your room and the size of how many people gonna listen there. So I think there's no one single answer, but I think and the way we approach this problem is that regardless of how many you have, we want to be able to cram the most out of them. I mean, in the first place, why do you use more than one subwoofer? Well, it is primarily, at least, it's almost always debatable, I guess, but it's to even out the variations from seat to seat, right? Because of the room interactions you have in the bass region. And the bass region is the most difficult one to get right in a room because there's so much of room interaction. It's hard to predict as well. It really is when you go into the room and when you place and install the subs and when you hear the result, measure this. So that's when you see what you're getting. There's no simple rule. It's like you said, Neil, there's so much science that goes into that, and it's just very, very complex. So our whole philosophy is also with these technologies that we have taken forward here is that, well, regardless of where you position the subwoofers, how many you have, we want to get the most out of that that system. But I think also there's actually, you know, clearly there's diminishing returns after a certain number, and for most spaces I would say you probably get very far with 3 subwoofers and advanced technology. 4 is better, obviously. Beyond 4, you may start getting less returns, I would say. And when we're talking about 16 or 32 subs, is it really worth it? There's also a point to make, especially with these advanced technologies such as active room treatment. At some point, we're able to take away everything from the room, everything. And then the question becomes, is that really what you want? Because you want some room interaction still. Uh-huh. We don't want to be in anechoic rooms when we listen to sound. So I think there's a limit to how many you should use. But where that limit is depends a bit on your room size, how many occupants, and so on.
Uh-huh. And perhaps the wallet.
Yes, that too, obviously.
So, Matthias, from your point of view, how important is the room design when it comes to thinking about your home theatre or your media room? And how much or how important is it to get that as acoustically right as you can before you then add something like your technology in Dirac?
I think you can approach it, first of all, from, I know you covered this before, how important the actual room is. I think still today, most people don't realize how extremely important the room acoustics is actually to your experience. You might have bought great equipment, and especially if you bought great equipment, the weakest link in your system is going to be the room. So that's the first point. And then, so when you then on top of that apply room correction, you might say, you know, if you would be a very extreme DSP advocate, you might say like, oh, it doesn't matter what the room is, you know, we can do everything with technology. Well, that's not quite true. We can do a lot, but we cannot do everything. We cannot break the rules of physics. So we always recommend that you start with a good room design, because that will create an absolute level in the end that is better than if you don't. So that's always a good starting point. But then again, of course, you don't always have that option. These days, a lot of people do not have dedicated listening rooms. You have multi-purpose rooms, and the modern aesthetics is also like you have a lot of hard surfaces and glass and so on, and you don't have space for advanced treatments, perhaps. So in that sense, you know, the room correction and the more advanced technologies such as active room treatment are there to provide a really good experience regardless of that. But of course, if you can afford to spend the money on a room design, you should definitely do that first. That's always going to give a better end result.
It's sometimes something that you hear on the forums, or certainly read in some comments. If we review an item that has Dirac on it, and sometimes you'll get a comment which is, "Oh, great, because my room is awful. I want that product because it has Dirac on board." Is it a miracle worker? Is it going to solve people's problems? I mean, some people, you know, where is the reality in terms of using DSP and using Dirac and so on to fix issues?
Now, obviously, I'm biased, right?
Yeah, that's why I've asked you first.
But in my mind, that's why we started the company. It was really that we found it like a revelation almost how much you can actually improve any system. So I'd say for me, it's a given. You know, I've listened to systems of all price ranges, and also, you know, in close listening, like studios and so on, where you don't have that much room interaction. And I have a great story to share. Actually, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to share who it is, but one of the great speaker designers still living, he told me a year ago that he was using Dirac Live in the anechoic chamber to make the speaker sound better. Because there's an interaction even with the speaker, you know, that you can't control fully, because he said the imaging gets so much better from that by having the phase alignment properly done and so on. But it's not still like a miracle medicine. Room correction and room correction comes in different flavors. I think that's important to highlight. What we try to do is not just look at a frequency response curve where you see how much different frequencies are attenuated relative to each other, but we're also looking at it in the time domain, and we analyze everything in the time domain, because a lot of what we do that really people appreciate is the phase response correction and the impulse response correction, which in effect makes all of the speakers sound more like each other, which helps spatial resolution a lot, because spatial resolution and spatial imaging is completely dependent on the correlation at our two ears of the signals that arrive there. And that is messed up by early reflections and by phase differences between the speakers, which are inevitable in a room, and especially if you have a multi-channel setup where you have typically different speakers, you don't have identical speakers. To get good imaging, you need that ability to correct the phase response. And then, you know, if we go even further, we talk about room correction, and it's typically speaker by speaker optimization. But when we go into the bass region, and especially multiple subwoofers, it's not enough to just optimize each of the subwoofers independently. Uh-huh. Because then you don't control how they interact and how they sum up together. So that's why we created this first this advanced bass management system that we call Bass Control, which tries to coordinate the different subwoofers by adjusting all pass filters, so only adjusting the phase response of the speakers, and ensuring they sum up coherently in the listening position, and also evening out the variations depending on where you sit in the room, so that you get a more consistent sound experience. And finally, this technology also optimizes the crossover region, the phase response there, so that they integrate nicely with the main speakers. And that's another dimension. When we start using this multi-speaker control, then we're able to do things that you weren't able to do before with traditional room correction, like actually changing the sound field in the room and making it not just better on average or in the sweet spot, but truly less variations across different seats, and you're able to do more. And that led us to develop this latest thing that we launched together with Storm Audio about a year ago, which was called, or is called, Active Room Treatment. And there we're saying that was our idea, was again coming from this standpoint, what can we do to ultimately to push the systems even further? Well, if we have a system with many speakers, why are we still just optimizing each of the main speakers individually? Well, let's see what we can do if we combine them optimally and let all the speakers support each other in the bass frequencies where we have the most room interactions, to actually combine optimally also in the time domain, not just evening out spatial variations, but really making them perform like a super subwoofer in a much better room. Then we're truly changing the wave propagation throughout the room. And that's somehow, then I think it's quite, that's a paradigm shift. Then it is really doing stuff that you otherwise would have to do with passive bass traps, for example. And it goes a little bit beyond that even. So there you're actually really changing the room acoustics when you're playing sound through these speakers. Not, of course, the sound that I produce when I talk, but from the speakers. So there we're starting to infringe on what was normally the room design when we're talking about this. And that's why we decided to call it Active Room Treatment, to highlight that now we're actually doing something which goes beyond traditional room correction. So yeah, so it's different levels of room correction, you could say, all these things. And when you think about bass control, it's really also just to help. One of the most difficult parts of setting up a system is the bass management part when you have subwoofers. It's about the crossover setting and the phase alignment of the multiple subwoofers and the crossover region. But Active Room Treatment does something else. It says, well, let's not do traditional bass management at all. Let's just see all the speakers for what they are. They are independent sources that we can use to create the best possible wave propagation in this room, to reproduce the material, the content, as faithfully as possible with as little of the detrimental room interaction as possible.
So I've heard this. I had the demo at CES 2 years ago. Very, very impressed. Like you said, it was an exclusive with Storm at the time, your technology. So, but I now understand that that's now available to more partners out there that you partner with in terms of the technology. So more people should be able to take advantage of that now and have that available to them.
Right now, it's still Storm Audio, that's the only one that's commercially available, but okay. There are other partners that are working on it, and it will eventually come out from more bands.
Yeah,
that we work with. Yes.
So, I guess at this point, I'm going to hand over to Jules. So Jules goes out in the field. He does a lot of calibration stuff, and you work with Dirac quite a bit, Jules, and in different environments and so on. Yep. So, in terms of the work that you do, and in terms of room design and so on, what's your experiences with the room, with multiple subwoofers, and then using technology like Dirac?
Well, first of all, Phil, I would just endorse what was said earlier about, room design is still very, very important. And the number of clients I come across who haven't addressed that and think that EQ is the answer to their to all their problems, it's surprising. When they hire me to calibrate their audio, the first thing I'm going to look at is, you know, have you got your speakers in the right place? Because it's amazing how many people don't. You know, there's no line of sight to certain speakers. They're shoved behind sofas or whatever. It's, you know, getting that right is going to make the biggest difference to start off with. And then, of course, you've got the kind of reflections that are going on in the room and whether you have some sort of acoustic treatment in there, some absorption, some diffusion. I know Neil's got some good products that can help address those kind of issues. And then you're talking about subwoofers. And then that you have that conversation about, if I have one 24-inch subwoofer, is it better than, you know, 4 12-inches or something like that? So again, it's just getting some of these basic solutions to these problems across. And then of course we come to EQ. And I've, you know, what I'm excited actually about recently is the fact we're seeing Dirac in a lot more product. Used to be, you know, usually, you know, around sort of the mid end, it used to be in, I don't know whether I can mention the brands, but, you know, it was used to be just Arcam. And now it's being found in Denon and Marantz and Pioneer and Onkyo and JBL Synthesis and, you know, lots of Emotiva, lots of brands coming on board, which excites me because I've never been in exactly enthusiastic about the offerings that those brands have had for themselves, particularly when it's combined with really, you know, not very good microphones. And what I like about Dirac is the ability to use a more professional microphone, more expensive one, that's going to gather your data. I mean, it's always that old adage, isn't it? You know, garbage in, garbage out. If your microphone's not very good, your quality of your data isn't very good, and you're off to a sticky wicket to start off with. So yeah, big enthusiast for Dirac. I think it makes a real difference. There are those different levels, and each level you step up from, you can hear that there is a difference. You know, as you, if you want to spend that little bit of extra and go up the next rung, it does make a difference too. Just integrating those subs with the bass control is, you know, it's pretty revelatory for some people what difference it makes. So, you know, I really enjoy working with Dirac, and so I'll be able to get my hands on the active room treatment this next week for the first time as well. So I'll see how that goes.
Excellent. So let's take it back to some basics. We've discussed, you know, and rounded up what we're going to talk about today. So let's just, you know, get into the subject a little bit more. So Neil, there'll be people listening to this, and a lot of what we're saying is just flying over their head, which is not a problem. You know, if you're not into this subject and you don't understand a lot of the terminology and so on, you know, that will be the case. So let's simplify it a little bit and start with the basics. So I am an enthusiast, and I am putting together a home theater or a media room, multi-channel, and I've heard so much about bass, and I've been to demos, and bass is my thing. I love bass. Where do I start? What is the best practice in terms of starting with one subwoofer and then adding more in? I mean, we're trying to use multiple subs to get over an issue. So what is the basics, and what's the issue that we're trying to get over at the beginning?
You've handed me the poison chalice of trying to simplify this subject. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I think that the first thing that people should always remember is always actually probably the most difficult. Okay. The thing that's important about a subwoofer is it is producing low frequencies. Okay. Typically up to 80 hertz, maybe 100 hertz, depending on how you set your system up. Now, those low frequencies have very long wavelengths. If you remember your high school physics, they have very long wavelengths. And those wavelengths are typically bigger in their length than your room is. It's kind of a confusing thing to think of, this giant long wave that's happening in your space. Now, what that results in is spatial problems as much as frequency response problems. Where you are in relation to that wave is actually where all of these bass problems that we speak about comes from. And you can actually model that fairly easily, where in a room you would have a very bad bass response and where in a room you would have a very good base response. Maybe we say better, guys, before we've done any correction or anything like that. Now, one subwoofer for one listener can be made to work very well, but that's a very rare situation, let's face it. Typically, what you have is a room with a number of seats, and because those seats are spatially distributed, i.e. they're not all in the same place, they're all at different points on these waves that we've been speaking about, and therefore they all have a different response. It's one of the easiest trainer demos, if we could say that, guys, to do the sub in the corner, let's listen to standing waves demo, which people generally have never heard before and are amazed that you can have bass at a certain frequency, which will make your insides vibrate when you're at the side of the room, but disappears as you move towards the center of the room, or perhaps goes and comes back and goes and comes back, depending on which frequency you're speaking about. Now, by adding these extra subwoofers, and two already goes a long way if you know where to put those two subwoofers, try not to just smash them randomly in the corner or something like that. But that already makes a huge response by evening out the spatial variations that you are getting. It's not so much about adding lots more headroom or any of those types of things. They may be side benefits. It's about evening out the response that you get. Now, that's where, in this we've already discussed, two subwoofers has always worked quite well for me. Four subwoofers has always worked better for me with the approach that I take to designing rooms and laying out subwoofers. If you put eight in, then we can solve most problems, not all. But that's where, of course, you order of magnitude every time the data that you need and the work that needs to be done to align these systems. Now, one of the things, and I don't know if you guys will agree with me, we seem to have settled down on channel madness for main channels. You know, we went from 5 to 11, and now seems to be, you know, 15 channels most people are pretty happy with. I had the good fortune a couple of weeks ago to do a 33 channel system Monday, Tuesday, and then a 51 channel system on Thursday, Friday. Those are not very easy systems to calibrate, I can tell you. Now, thankfully, that seems to have settled down. But of course, that kind of leads to what's the next thing that we're going to have madness of. And I kind of hope that we don't get into subwoofer madness. And there's been lots of cool stuff with subwoofers. Infra subs, we've all heard of that at this minute in time. And doing bass management on subwoofers to have like three-way subwoofer systems and all that. It's all super cool stuff. But not to be undertaken without a certain level of dedication, if we could say that, on those things. And I think for our average user, if you could understand enough and put two subs in your cinema, you're going to get very, very far compared to the guy that doesn't understand and slaps one sub in the corner.
Anything to add to that, Jules?
No, Neil's got it. Neil sorted it. I knew he would. But yeah, if you've ever been in any one of those demos where you've walked around the room and you've heard the different bass response in seating positions, people have often never had that experience. It is well worth doing it just to illustrate the problems that we have in these small rooms. And absolutely getting the subs in the getting the right number of subs. I would usually advocate, you know, certainly never just one, minimum two, more optimally four. But of course, subs are big, can be big things. You know, so if you've got a sort of an average size room, like my sort of garage conversion cinema is 5.5 by 3.5 meters, there's a limit to how many 18 inch subs I can put in and still have somewhere to sit. I think everybody finds their limits, and that's when then, you know, something like Dirac can then sort of do its magic.
And Matthias, is there an easy win for people when they're setting up the system? And we're talking about at least two subwoofers. So how does someone then figure out where the best position for those subs are within the room before they then apply EQ or Dirac?
That is a great question. It's not that easily answered, though, because, you know, there is really no cookbook answer to it. But and I'm sure Neil and Jule can really add here, but my recommendation is you could think about it like this. You want to time your subwoofers with the main speakers, right? So like if you have a two-channel system, simply, then it makes sense, obviously, to put your subs near the main speakers. But most of the time you have a multi-channel, so what do you do then? Well, you want to, with especially when you apply this technology such as bass control or active room treatment, really what these technologies try to do, which we just talked about, is like to even out those spatial variations and improve the bass response overall, by the way. And how do we do that? Well, we need to time the waves coming from these subwoofers, these long waves that Neil talked about. We move them a little bit ahead or backwards in time to time them with the room, so to speak, and so that they add up at the right point, at the right point in time, at all different positions, so that you have the same response there. But then you need to think, okay, how can I do that? Well, I need diversity in the positioning. So that's actually the key thing for these kind of technologies, to actually spread the bass speakers out, even in the three dimensions, even in the height plane as well. Because then we have more possibilities. You know, think about it as creating waves in the room, creating reflections in the room. And I want to be able with this technology, or for the technology to work as well as it can, it needs to be able to put out these reflections, these anti-reflections from different angles. Because otherwise we cannot control. If you have a reflection, a standing wave along, you know, the dimensions back to forward, and I need that degree of freedom. And for the left to right, I need that degree of freedom. So spreading them out as much as possible in different directions would be an important advice, I would say. But I'm happy to hear Neil and Jules pitch in here, because it's notoriously difficult to know what will be the best position for your subs.
Well, of course, there's a big difference between a rectangular room and a non-rectangular room. We should stress that. And yeah, non-rectangular room, all bets are off. You're just going to have to try and measure that. Let's be honest, we can model it all we want, but measuring that's going to have to be the best thing. When it comes to a rectangular room, I can tell for me personally, I've always had very good success with one subwoofer at the quarter point of the room on the front wall at low level, a second subwoofer at the diagonally opposite quarter point, but high level. That's a little trick that we use all the time, because it gives you all of a sudden that envelopment and the ability to sum these waves together, that if you didn't have that spatial distribution, would be very, very challenging. That's always worked well for us. When I have four subwoofers, I also like to use the quarter points. And I know that even is a debating point. Some people prefer corners because you get the energy lift. I like the quarter points. But I like to put them around the midline. And of course, you can do all your tricks to distribute them. I like to do it around the midline because of the first resonance in the height plane. Normally, I find to be the most troublesome, rather than doing quarter points with eight subwoofers, basically, in the height plane. So that's how we tend to end up in the systems that we do with four subwoofers at this minute in time, working very well. And then we just try to avoid putting people on the three-quarter line, moving from front to back of the room, which is always just, if you're on that point, folks, you're dead. So don't expect any good bass at that point.
If people want to have some fun sort of playing with these things, Room EQ Wizard, which is a free piece of software, will let you move around subs in real time and see the effect, or the predicted effect of the, you know, the moving around to your seating position, just illustrating what Neil said. You know, you can move them up and down the height of the subs and the locations within the room. You can add multiple subwoofers and see what it's doing. So if anybody wants to have a play with that, they can do it very easily.
Yeah, and I think you've also got some tools as well, Neil.
So if you look at Cinema Tools, so cinema-tools.com, one of the calculators on there is a room resonance calculator, which will work out for you your various resonances in the width, height, and length. And it's just a free tool. You can do that online. So that's something that can be very useful to let you know for your room dimensions what are likely to be the most troublesome frequencies for you.
So I think we've, in the time we've got allocated to this anyway, I think we've covered most of some of the myths. We've given you some advice in terms of how you can maybe place the subwoofers whereabout in the room. And obviously there's some tools there that you can also go and use. And again, it's one of these tricky subjects that there's lots of discussion around. So go to AV Forums, got the subwoofer forum in there, lots of discussions in there that you can get involved with. And if you've got any questions on subwoofers, multi-subwoofers and so on, then obviously podcast@avforums.com on the email, in the comments below if you're watching on YouTube. And of course, avforums.com forum list all the way down the bottom, find the podcast forum in this podcast and ask your question there. But while we've got Matthias on the podcast, let's talk a little bit more about Dirac and the technology. And as Jules alluded to, it's available on a lot more product these days. So as a developer, as a co-founder, as someone who this is close to your heart, you have the opportunity here to explain to our audience or give them tips on what they should be doing with your technology. What's the best way? They've set the room as best they can. They've got the speakers in the best possible positions as possible. Is there any tricks and tips to using Dirac that you want to get across here?
Well, yes, of course. When we do room correction, I think the measurements, we touched upon that earlier. The key is the measurements. We need to measure what goes on in the room. And so with Dirac Live, allows you to do is to take multiple measurements across your listening region. And that's the key here. And that's the thing to remember. It's like the questions we often get is, where do I put the microphone as well? How many measurements do I take? So the important thing is not exactly where you put each of the microphone positions. Generally, depending on your space, but typically you will be fine by taking 9 different measurement positions. And the first one should always be in the center, because that's where we do the time and gain alignment on. So that's sort of a crucial measurement point where you want, you know, the best spatial imaging. But then you should spread out the measurements where people will reasonably be positioned when they listen, where their ears will be a little bit upwards, downwards, to the left and to the right and so on. Don't put them too densely into one spot in the hope that now we really optimize for the small seat, now we get fantastic sound there. The way our auditory system works, we're very adaptive. We move a little bit all the time and we kind of hear out the room. So you want to create a room correction that allows you to move a little bit, because we do move a little bit. And it's not crucial to have the positions, you know, exactly right. The crucial thing is to try to sample this space. What goes on in the acoustics in this particular room? So that's the advice I give you when you do your measurements. Just spread them out in your listening room where your head will be, not, you know, at very close to a wall or very close to a ceiling or something, but, you know, reasonably where your ears will be, where you have a direct line of sight to the speaker and so on. And then you will get great results. Then what you can also do is you can play around with what we call the target curve. Based on the measurements you take in your particular room, Dirac Live will suggest the target curve for you. And this is a science of itself. And it's a, you know, this is a probably a seminar in itself, how to set it up right. But this is where you get a little bit into, you know, personalization to you, what you prefer in terms of how much bass and treble. The important thing after room correction is that you have a frequency response which is free, or as free as possible from resonances, which are small peaks and valleys. So you have a smooth frequency response. Then if you have a little bit, you can change a little bit more bass or a little bit less treble, for example. That's more the tonal balance thing. That is, you can easily you can listen to and say what you prefer. So that's also where you can go in and play around a little bit. And that's fun to experience and hear where I prefer to have the bass. Often in rooms, listening rooms, not studio. If you're in a studio, in a close, very close, near field listening situation, then you want a very flat response, almost entirely flat typically. Whereas when you're a little bit further away from a speaker, the natural propagation loss that you get is such that you want a little bit less treble and a little bit more bass lift than a completely flat curve, which might seem first counterintuitive. You might think that, well, we need all the frequencies to reproduce equally loud. Well, not really. It becomes not quite natural than when you're a few meters away from the listening, from the speaker when you're, where you listen. So there's some advice on how you can set your target curve. And that's where you can play around and actually find the sound of your liking, which is quite fun, I think. So, you know, that's what we try to do with the technology. We try to provide also, first of all, it's about optimization, but it's also about being able to tailor it a bit and make your own adjustments, which I think is a fun part of it. And we're going to add more and more functionality to Direct Live. And we started with the bass control feature, which solved one of the difficulties you have when you're setting up your system, with the bass integration. And then with active room treatment, we took sort of a very fresh look at what can be done with a multi-channel setup. It's a fundamentally new approach, which we think will eventually lead to also people starting to experiment with new speaker setups, because now we're not just treating the bass such as subwoofers up to 80 or 100 hertz. We're going up to 150 hertz and making room optimizations and cooperation between speakers. So that would allow you actually to use smaller main speakers combined with bass speakers that go further up in frequency than traditional subwoofers that don't play above 100 hertz. Actually, we use that in cars with woofers indoors and so on that go up to 200 hertz and above, just to improve the room acoustics. And I think we can start with this kind of technology. We can start designing such systems in rooms. So that's another just topic for exploration for the community, to come up with new system designs based on new technologies such as these, which I think is an exciting future development.
Yeah, excellent. So before we wrap up, Neil, anything that you want to add?
I do have a question. So here it's an interesting one. So one of the big things obviously right now is this whole infra subs discussion. Now, for anyone who hasn't seen the sheer size of a subwoofer needed to deliver 10 hertz, it's not for the faint of heart. And I wonder if, in fact, that perhaps it's the tactile as opposed to airborne sensation. For me, I actually feel that there's a huge opportunity opening up for the old tactile transducer. Is that something that you guys have looked at in any way or considered in any way at this minute in time, how to sort of blend those two technologies together?
Yeah, because we do run into them in cars. That's a trend there as well. It's funny how the car audio systems today are starting to become more like home theater system, and we see some trend, you know, some things coming in there first and some coming from home audio. And so it's very interesting. And more channel counts. It's crazy. 30 channel systems is a norm in premium car sound systems these days. But there, it's become a little bit popular. We'll see if it's a trend that vanishes, goes away as fast as it came. But to have tactile transducers in the seats and so on, shakers, So we are facing them, so to speak. And if for cars, my own, you know, personal preference, I'm not that fond of them, to be honest, because I just feel like, oh, the car is shaking. I feel something broken with my car rather than a nice audio experience. But I've also experienced audio systems in other settings with tactile transducers that actually make sense. So even though today we tune these tactile transducers, but we don't have specific measurement-based optimization of them. We're looking into that, though, because there is research down there, and there's research that we do that shows we can do some interesting stuff there to create something which is slightly better. We haven't done any, you know, serious product plans or so to launch anything imminently to the home audio market on that. But I do agree, and I think if we look at the trends and you talk about, okay, what's the next thing in audio? That might very well be the thing, right? Might very well be the thing.
I just think that, you know, it's all well and good if you're on your country estate, but if you live in a fairly normal urban environment, you're blasting out 10 hertz bass at 120 dB is not going to make you very popular with your neighbours. And that's where I think there's some really interesting actuator products. People always want to poo-poo a tactile actuator. Yes, you get stupid buzzy rubbish things, but some very interesting stuff doing linear performance at like 5 hertz and stuff like that. And that is impressive. You know, it's not like it's a cost saving, to be honest with you, at that sort of a level. But I have been very interested in that. So it just brings new challenges because, of course, that's vibrational, not in any way airborne noise or anything like that.
Yeah, you do need some control on it. But it does make sense, like you said, for a lot of these domestic use cases, because, like you said, you're not going to be popular among your neighbors.
Well, I can speak to that. We had we lived some away from a field away from somebody on the other side of the of this field. They had a party just the other night, and the bass that was coming from there was rattling our windows, and we are quite a way away from them, so yeah, they weren't very popular around our way for their party the other night. But I do have a question, Matthias, and that is, could you speak to a question that I think a lot of people might have, which is when you take your measurements in Dirac, you can see the frequency responses of your speakers, and to a certain point, after a certain point, the speakers all tend to align. They have a very similar response, which is probably the vocality of that speaker brand. And to what extent, with your sort of automated correction, which is still a possibility within Dirac, you try and avoid changing that response and imposing something upon it, you know. So, you know, if you like your BMW or you like your whatever brand of speakers it may be, to what extent would you override that or just respect it and just travel with it?
So we both do respect it and we don't, so to speak, right? Because when we see things, what we see from the measurements is things that are anomalous. We want to try to take away, if we will actually typically not respect, unless you really tell the algorithm to it, to respect what can be objectively seen as sort of flaws in the speaker design, like where there is an obvious resonance, which is something that, you know, that you as a speaker manufacturer really don't want to, but it's also very difficult to get rid of all of them. So that will be removed. But we do, based on the measurements in your room, we actually adjust the target a bit to what these measurements tell us. So we don't go for that sort of very flattish response. We do adjust it slightly towards your speakers. Mm-hmm. And we do also recognize that some people prefer to, because they bought a certain speaker and they really like that characteristic. And we also allow, we have this, what we call a curtain above which, a certain frequency above which we say, okay, we will not touch the frequency response above that. So it's also a user option to say, I don't want to do something with the high frequency. But typically that also means you're really not utilizing the full power of the technology. I would say that for most people, I would recommend that you still do a full range correction. Much of what we hear as the character of a speaker, I would say, it's not so much visible in that frequency response in a room, really. I think it has more to do with dispersion characteristics and also so how it spreads the sound throughout the room. And so that's more of a spatial characteristic and also nonlinear characteristics. So I think, you know, we've done so many different tunings, of course, with different rooms. And I would say if you're an experienced listener, you will recognize still what speaker brand it is. It doesn't sort of erase everything. We're not that good with DSP, so that we can completely eliminate the characteristics of the speaker itself. I think so. That's my rather long answer to that. It's neither yes nor no in a way.
Well, Matthias, it's been great having you on the podcast today. Hopefully you'll pop back again in the future, and we can continue our discussions on home AV and how to get the best out of our systems. But for today, thank you very much for your time.
I'd love to come back. Thank you so much, Phil, and all.
And again, I need to thank Jules and Neil. Thanks very much, guys, for your input today. It is appreciated. And
cheers,
that's it for the Home AV podcast. Our next podcast is the Movies and TV Show edition. That's with Kaz and the team on Monday, the 27th of May. And that'll be followed by the 4K and Blu-ray Physical Media Show, which is on the 30th of May. And thank you very much, everybody who's listening to the podcast, especially the last 4K Ultra HD. It just shows the passion that's out there for physical media. You guys, you really still want that in your homes. And that was seen and borne out with the numbers of you that listened into that one, to Kaz and the guys. So thank you very much for that. Those editions will be available, as always, Monday at 7 p.m. on the AV Forums podcast YouTube channel. Go and subscribe to that. You'll get the podcast as soon as they go live. And of course, we're also available on most of the podcast providers out there as an audio-only version. And don't forget, we're here every Monday. If you enjoyed the podcast as well, then please do all the cliched social stuff like clicking bells and all the rest of it, and so on, thumbs up and so on. And of course, if you did enjoy this episode and you think more people should hear it, then please go and share it around all the different social channels out there, so more people can find and discover us out here. And of course, you can also buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/AVForums. If you enjoyed today's show, go buy everybody that's on it a coffee. I'm Phil Hinton. Thank you very much for watching and listening, and we'll see you again soon. Goodbye.